daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked on Mizzou, your destination for partisan Missouri Tigers football and basketball talk 5 days a week. And thanks to everybody who voted and continues to vote in the Mizzou Madness Bracket. The first round is up and going and will be going for about a week. We'll close it out at the end of Sunday, Monday at midnight to be exact. And, well, it's just a fun bracket that's been generating some pretty good discussion so far. So I hope you're enjoying it. It's all going to be up to you now. I set the seeds and the matchups. Well, now you all, it's up to you to pick the winners. And I do want to talk about some news breaking today first, though, involving Kim English. He was up for the Southeast Missouri State head coaching job, and turns out Kim is going to stay in Knoxville as an assistant coach with Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers. And Blake and I touched on the potential of Kim possibly going to SEMO earlier on this show, and well, we both thought that move didn't really make a whole lot of sense for him. Mostly because, well, Kim has had pretty good success so far. Five years maybe as an assistant. He started with Frank Haith at Tulsa, had a couple seasons at Colorado, and now one season in Knoxville under Rick Barnes. And, well, obviously Kim, as we all know, he's a charismatic, intelligent guy, hardworking, ambitious. You know, he's always a good student, a planner. Clearly the guy has a plan for what he wants a program to look like, a basketball team to look like. And quite honestly, knowing Kim just a tiny bit from the outside looking in, not that we actually know each other or anything, but just having followed his career and having known some people that do know him, I think it makes sense that English would definitely want to go through this interview process and see what it looked like. Mostly just see, hey, what does it feel like to actually interview for a head coaching job? What do I need to pitch? What are my strengths in this environment? What are maybe my weaknesses? What could I get better at? That type of deal. And, you know, just find out how others would react. Professionals, ADs, boosters, however it might be, get to rub elbows with those people a little bit and sort of try on that suit, if you will. See how that feels. And, you know, I think just going through that process will be pretty valuable for Kim going forward, because obviously he is a guy who has head coaching aspirations. Honestly, if you're Kim English, sorry, too many Kims from Missouri apparently, but no, I would just, if I'm Kim English, I would be thinking, if it's possible, and I've gotten some indications that he has all the love for Mizzou in the world, and I think maybe there's a little bit of a misunderstanding here. See, we all remember the 2015, the poop swastika protest, for lack of a better description, the concerned citizen 1950 thing. I think, I can't even remember what Kim said, and I thought about looking it up, to be honest, but reality is I don't care, because some people were a little bit turned sideways by whatever Kim said. His words, you know, went up sideways, if you will, up the wrong chute. And all right, okay, so we can have political disagreements, right? We can disagree about a topic here and there, but does that mean we have to hate one of our true sons? And by the way, it's not as though Kim Anderson has turned his back on the University of Missouri. And by the way, I called him Kim Anderson again. It's Kim English. My goodness. So if Kimmy English, it'd be one thing if he was like, oh, screw Mizzou, blah, 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 blah. He never said that. He just, I don't remember what he said, but clearly all the indications I'm getting is that Kim would love to come back here, which is why about a year ago I thought, you know, maybe Michael Porter Sr. will move on, and who knows, maybe Kim English will slide into the Missouri job. But instead, well, Kim ended up in Knoxville, and obviously Michael Porter Sr. stayed around, and Konzo Martin hired a different assistant coach. The bottom line is, if you are Kim English, and by the way, speaking of Kim Anderson, who I accidentally brought up about three times earlier, if Missouri can hire a former alum like Kim Anderson and like Barry Odom, two guys who maybe didn't have the most head coaching experience? Is it impossible to imagine that if maybe it doesn't work out for Konzo Martin ultimately in a year or two, that Kim English's name could at least be a candidate? Now, weirdly, I almost think the fact that he's an alum works against him if he wanted to come here because, well, those last two names, obviously it wasn't totally successful to one degree or another. Kim Anderson, Barry Odom, lasted seven total seasons. So, you know, we all know what happened there. We don't need to rehash it. But my point is I don't know that the timing is necessarily going to be right after Konzo, but Kim is such a young guy. What is he, 31 years old or something? Who knows where that guy is? Who knows where this life, this career, this game is going to take him? I'm just interested to see it. I'll say that. And I just say to anybody who still has some, I don't know, bad feelings about something Kim Anderson may have said 5 years ago that you may have disagreed with. Well, for one thing, who knows? Maybe Kim even disagrees with himself from 5 years ago, for one. Or maybe he doesn't at all. That's okay. As long as we can all come together and come to some sort of understanding, things will be okay. I don't feel like Kim English hates us or anything. That'd be one thing, but clearly that's not the case, I promise you. And coming up, I want to talk about Eli Drinkwitz and his seeming different preferences, or maybe more of an open mind to a different style of quarterback than what Barry Odom seemed to prefer. Well, earlier today, Eli Drinkwitz has become his signature move on Twitter, sent out what people are calling the bat signal. Well, it's really a tiger roar gif of some sort, and basically it's signaling that, look out, in the next few hours here, we're going to have a new football commitment announced. Well, as of this recording, I have yet to see said football commitment, and damn it, am I disappointed, because God knows I am reaching really hard for content right now, as anybody in this particular fine business is. But you know what? I'm creative and I've got ideas, and in spite of all of this. And the one trend that has become obvious among the guys that have committed so far for the 2021 class, with the exception of tight end Gavin McKay, who's from Memphis, he's the only guy who had an offer from Barry Odom. The rest of those guys, Tyler Macon, quarterback from East St. Louis, Mecky Wingo, DeSmet, defensive lineman, and then offensive lineman Connor Tolleson, who just committed from Jackson, Missouri. Yeah, none of those guys had offers from Odom, so that's kind of interesting. And especially what I noticed at quarterback, no offers for Tyler Macon, even after that big junior season where he leads East St. Louis to the state championship. They go undefeated. Macon puts up huge numbers, throwing for over 4,000 yards, rushes for 18 touchdowns. I mean, just crazy stuff. But yet Missouri never offered him under Barry Odom. Yet he got an offer pretty quickly under Eli Drinkwitz, and obviously he's committed. And once again, if you guys want to hear my take on Tyler Macon, if you already did, I'm very bullish on the kid. I think he's an underrated talent. I think he should be at least a four-star recruit to me, if not higher. I think four stars actually sounds about right to him, but to me, three stars, again, listen to those numbers, watch his tape. I promise you the only reason that Barry Odom didn't offer him is because of his size. He's about 6 foot, 180, 175 pounds, something like that. Whereas you look at the two guys that Barry Odom recruited at quarterback most recently, him and his staff, Connor Bazelak is 6'4", and Brady Cook is 6'3". Both those guys are over 200 pounds. So more of your sort of old-style, I'd say, pro-style quarterback with the bigger, taller frame. And now, don't get me wrong, I like Connor Bazelak. The little I saw of him last year, I was impressed. So don't get me wrong, Drew Locke sort of fit that frame too. Obviously, he's even a little bit taller than those guys. Nothing wrong with Drew Locke. He was a great college quarterback for Mizzou, clearly. But I just think there may have been a little bit of a blind spot there on this Macon kid with Odom and his staff that, I don't know, surprises me a tiny bit. Because, you know, as soon as I watched the film, again, there were just some things about Macon's game, the way he threw on the run, the confidence and poise, the way the ball, you know, he just made quick decisions. He made quick, confident decisions, and he took off to run when it was there. He's clearly a pass-first guy, but you definitely can't just ignore him on a scramble. That's for darn sure. And by the way, speaking of Brady Cook, I just realized a content idea. Hey, if I'm going to break down Tyler Macon, if I consider myself the quarterback guru, well, heck, why not get that Brady Cook film coming for you guys as well? The Brady Cook film breakdown, I should say. Yeah, we'll get you that later in the week, maybe next week. Hey, why not? Give me something to do. But first of all, we're going to get to some matchups in that Mizzou football and basketball madness bracket. Easy for me to say. Coming right up after this. You know what? I'm going to call a slight audible here. And instead of breaking down these specific matchups, because, well, quite honestly, a lot of these guys are pretty recent players that you're familiar with. So I think in this segment, and probably bleeding over into the next show, honestly, looking at the clock here, I want to tell you about some guys that made the bracket from back in the day that you might not be quite as familiar with as, say, guys like Jeremy Maclin, for instance. And one of those guys certainly has got to be Danny LaRose because, well, even though he's one of the great Mizzou football players of all time, for whatever reason, never had his number retired. So the name not brought up as much as, say, your Johnny Rowlands of the world. But I'll just read from Danny's Mizzou Intercollegiate Athletics Hall of Fame bio here. One of the greatest two-way talents in Missouri history, LaRose starred from 1958 to 1960 as an end who could dominate the line of scrimmage and was also MU's leading receiver as a sophomore and senior. He also punted for MU in 1960. A native of Crystal City, Missouri, LaRose won all-conference honors in 58 and 60, was a consensus All-American selection in 1960 when Missouri beat Navy and Heisman Trophy winner Joe Bellino in the Orange Bowl. So there you go. That's a pretty good resume, right? Not too shabby. The guy played both ways, dominated, was the consensus All-American on a great 1960 Missouri team that won the Orange Bowl. Yeah, okay. Now you see why he had to make the top 16 of Mizzou football players, right? Now, while all of you are very aware of Norm Stewart, I do want to give you a little bit more background on Norm as a basketball player because, well, obviously he played in the early 1950s. You know, something to keep in mind about Norm and as a basketball player back in the day, you know, he would get on guys at times if they took a shot that he didn't like. And I think some of his former teammates would giggle at that a little bit because they would say, well, there were a few shots that Norm didn't like. But the reality was, is while Norm was that team's best scorer, by all accounts, he was their best passer, rebounder, and ball handler as well. And not a surprise why the St. Louis Hawks would be interested in a guy who was a 6'5" guard in an era where centers were about that size, right? And the fact that, you know, Stewart is still top 10 in scoring and rebound average in Mizzou history. And if they actually kept, you know, assists, he'd probably be in there too. But, and also, even more impressive, Missouri without a lot of basketball history at that point, especially in the 50s, you know, got him really close to a conference title a couple times. So that's an impressive thing. And, well, obviously once he was gone, the team kind of went into a spiral for years until he came back as a coach. So just quickly there, I wanted to put a little ribbon on the Norm Stewart as a player discussion. Now, one guy who does have his name on that Faurot Field wall, you probably don't know a whole lot about, if you're being honest with yourself, is Bob Stuber. Now, here's a guy, such an incredible athlete for his day, played with the Tigers in the early 1940s with Paul Chrisman, and Don Faurot, part of that split-T offense. Well, Stuber, also a track athlete and apparently a legendary drinker as well. Apparently Bob would stay up and drink beer until 4 a.m. and then get on his black and gold track outfit and then go out and win the 100-yard dash, the 220, the broad jump, and then get third place in the high jump as well. That was the kind of dude that he was. The thing is, Stuber was actually even better. He was the reason that Faroe started the split T offense in some ways. Not the reason, but he was the reason that it worked. Let's put it that way, based on everything that I've read. Like, I was alive during World War II and watching Bob Stuber, but that's what everybody says. All the classic Mizzou football books and the info that I've been able to gather. He was just basically the perfect guy. Again, the guy could win the 100-yard dash in college at the time, so imagine him taking snaps and running a triple option out of a split T formation. He could throw it a little bit, too. Ooh, that sounds like a really tough, fun offense to watch, if you ask me. And you got to love the fact that 37 is the number that he wore. Playing quarterback with number 37, a leather helmet, no face mask. What a different era. But, you know, despite the fact it was a completely different era of college football, the fact is, you know, when you go back and you look at that split T offense, really break it down, the fascinating part of it is, oh, there's a lot of concepts that are still in football today that Don Faroe had really kind of figured out. Not that he was the first guy to invent the option or anything like that, but let's face it, Oklahoma would go on to sort of modify this offense to make it into the wishbone. But I just mean just little things like how watch on a read option play out of a shotgun when there's just a quarterback and a running back. Well, what they do is there'll be one guy that is unblocked, and that's where the read part of the play comes in. Well, guess what? Don Faroe was doing that stuff 75 years ago, literally. So it's interesting just to go back and look at the history of this stuff. So Bob Stuber, certainly more than worthy of being in the top 16. And you know what? Next time on this here podcast, Locked On Mizzou, we'll talk more about some of these guys from the past that you may not be familiar with, and whatever comes up, hopefully Eli will finally reveal who his mystery recruit is. So, until then, we'll talk to you Wednesday, right here. Oh, by the way, check out our guys, the podcast Draft Dudes is part of the Locked On Network. But again, we'll see you Wednesday, right here on Locked On Mizzou.